が達三四郎、瀬が佐三四郎。
Everybody, and welcome to episode 413 of the Siren Studs podcast. I'm Kurt, joined once again this week by my subterranean co-host, Peter.
Deep in the below the hollow earth within the hollow earth, we're coming at you live.
From even hollower earth.
The hollower earth, the hollowest earth. There is no core, it just keeps going down. I'm coming at you with maybe slightly relevant to this cast, the bee hopping edition of the podcast, because we're going to try and maybe go unnaturally fast.
Yes. If you are a longtime listener of the show, you will remember when Peter and I used to do a weekly show that went from anywhere between 45 and 55 minutes. I don't know that we're going to be able to get back to that, but goddamn, we're going to try.
We're going to go. Because it is,
isn't it?
we are on the verge of greatness.
Yes, we will.
And I'm just ready. I'm rip roaring. I'm ready.
We'll discuss it at the appropriate segment. But in the spirit of moving things along, let's go right into Trey Watch. That's right. That's the fastest Trey Watch you've seen on the show in about 5 years.
30 seconds. I think we get an achievo for
yes.
that.
Yes. All right. Let's start with the most pretentious movie that I have ever. Or witness to my for myself, Janet Planet.
Janet Planet.
A24 brings you the indie Supercell movie.
Like there are two. When you think of the word A24, there are two different movies. There's like the weird psychological horror, man becomes a monster. Freak out horror
or like
movie.
Yeah, the weird horror yeah. movie. Let's just follow that because they then, had the one about the dress and the fucking evil weave.
Yes, which I wait. I don't remember that.
Oh,
one.
It's that it exists.
Was that a, if that's true, that's actually really funny because that was I think that was a episode or a spot on like a Simpsons Treehouse of Horror.
I think we made that comparison at the time.
Okay. Good, good. I'm glad we did because that's literally the first. I'm like, didn't they like get Snake, whatever Snake, what's his face's like hair off and it infected Homer's brain? Oh, God, that was good. But no, this is the other kind. This is the, you know, we got a bunch of actors and they really wanted to just do. I'm sure it's very interesting for them. A bunch of very interesting for them scenes. Yeah. But for us, it's people standing around with no real plot, just walking around in very hippie-esque housing.
Yeah, it's very meandering. I'll read to you the synopsis, and you'll
stop me if you've heard this.
You'll
one
get
before.
The idea. In rural western Massachusetts, 11-year-old Lacey spends the summer of 1991 at home, enthralled by her own imagination and the attention of her mother, Janet. As months pass, three visitors enter their orbit, all captivated by Janet and her spellbinding nature. I just want to point out that she seems to be the most plain and boring person imaginable from what they present in the trailer. But apparently
yes,
she has this
indie level of aggressively uninteresting.
Yeah. But she has a spellbinding nature. In her solitary moments, Lacey inhabits an inner world so extraordinarily detailed that it begins to seep into the outside world. I don't know if that means literally.
I don't know how that... was that the scene with the Mayflower dancing llamas?
Perhaps.
Was that what that was? Where it was, they just wore costumes and they were just dancing in the field.
Pulitzer Prize. This is the most pretentious summary sentence of a synopsis I think I've ever read. Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Annie Baker captures a child experience of time passing. An ineffability of a daughter falling out of love with her mother in a singularly sublime film debut.
Yeah, that's like, this definitely smacks of a movie that was written by a playwright. I'll put it that way.
And that it's nothing actually happens. It's a lot of talking.
Yeah, it's a very theatrical movie. Yeah. Where you're like, I need to write 2 hours of dialogue scenes and monologue scenes.
Which,
and maybe have one thing of action happen.
You can do that. It's worked before, but usually the conversations are a bit more interesting.
I will say, though, all of these things in they I gotta put this together. This is a very good movie. You know what metric is coming. It's my personal metric of my mom can watch it.
Yes.
Because this is like exactly her type of movie. So it is not for me, but I will make sure that she has a card to the local independent theater. And she can go out and watch this and then go and have a cup of coffee and not have to worry about, like, the state of planet Earth for an hour and a half.
Or maybe she will. Who knows what kind of messages they're going to try to cram into this thing.
Yeah. It could have one of those, like, where she gets, like, Janet gets, like, cancer in the third act or something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, it was the twist all along. She has to
the magnetism was the value cancer. Of life
and all the little moments.
That's why they were all drawn to her. They're doctors trying to treat her.
Even the 11-year-old.
Especially the 11-year-old. No, no, she's just a figment of her imagination. She's a chemotherapy dream. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have weird dreams on chemo drugs?
I don't know. I know your hair turns curly.
Yes, that happened to my grandpa. His hair fell out and then it grew back curly.
It's the mysteries of the thing. But I'm literally on a freeze frame of this right now, and it's is it Julianne Nicholson? Is she plays Janet?
I don't fucking know. I think it's the mom.
I don't think she's Zoe Ziegler. But she's like in center frame. And this was just a random freeze frame from the trailer. I'm looking over, and right next to her is the little kid just looking up, like, sardonically, like, mm-hmm. Like giving me, like, young Sheldon vibes. Yeah, no, this is... If you've ever wanted a house that's also a barn, this movie is for you.
All right. Onto a movie that I was advertised to me many times today on Reddit I even saw the trailer or knew what was happening. It's simply called Kill.
Yes. This is the exact opposite.
It's the Bollywood version of Bullet Train /
they
The
finally
Rain.
Made the Kill movie.
But all the advertising on Reddit described it as the most brutal and violent movie that's ever been made, apparently.
It will have to prove that to me from this trailer.
Yeah, I mean, it's violent, but it's far from the most violent movie I've seen. It's not even the most violent action movie I've seen in the last 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at this, I'm like, all right, so you've set up one long set piece, fight scene kind of thing. You now have to stand up to Old Boy, The Raid, and Bullet Train.
Yeah.
You have thrust yourself into that arena.
You are.
I do not think the odds look
good
for
you. You are coming at some pretty heavy heads wearing some pretty heavy crowns. You best not miss.
And I don't think the fire extinguisher execution quick time event is gonna cut it.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll
give it a chance. I mean, I don't. The advertising of this smacks of a Bollywood movie where, you know, all the nation of hype beasts is out in force trying to hype up their own.
Yep. I will say, if there is a dance number in this movie,
that would be great. I think
that would set you apart from the field.
Yes, that would definitely put you in your own unique strata. That's for sure.
Yeah, so go watch Kill.
Western studios wouldn't have the balls to put a dance sequence in their action movie.
So if they make a sequel, are they going to just call it Die?
Maybe Killed? Past tense?
Murder.
Yeah, they'll just flip through the thesaurus. Murder, Unalive, Delete, 86.
Homicide. The Homicide the Movie. It's 2024. It's leading the box office. All right, not a trailer, I guess, but I need to talk about it.
Okay.
The Fly Me to the Moon trailer announcement spot. Now, we've had this kind of thing happen before, but I just need to highlight it again. This is a trailer for the trailer, because the trailer is coming out after the cast comes out. So we get to see the trailer for the trailer, where it's just Scarlett Johansson talking to... Yeah, it's Channing Tatum. Okay. He looked a little different, but she's like, oh, look, I have to call Channing Tatum, who's also going to be in this movie, and we're going to count down from five. And then you'll see the trailer on Monday. So why did we count down from five?
Yeah, I guess. It is kind of weird.
I love this plot synopsis, plot TBD.
Well, I feel like they counted down because of the rocket aspect of it.
I guess so. I guess this is going to be about space.
Movie. Some
space program.
Some capacity, yeah. Don't know if it's comedy, drama, whatever. With those two actors, it could really be anything.
I'm looking at some of the other top build, and I would actually kind of want to see this as like a thriller movie. Because it's Scarlett Johansson, Channing Tatum, Jim Rash, Ray Romano, and Woody Harrelson.
Okay. Well, Ray Romano had his Uncut Gems moment, and Woody Harrelson has done plenty of serious stuff in the past. So yep. It could really go either way. You can have one funny character that Jim Rash plays.
Maybe. Yeah. So I just want to talk about this. Just the endless, like... stacking, double stacking, early release beta edition of the trailer.
Essentially, it's just a, you can't call it a teaser because it's got nothing to do with the movie, and in the stead of a concise term like a teaser that tells you exactly what you're up against, you go with perhaps the most convoluted title you could possibly muster, which is trailer announcement spot. And they're running out of
words.
That just sounds like you're trying to SEO the crap out of this.
It's like I was watching the Red Letter Media Frozen Empire half in the bag, and they were talking about how Halloween is rebooting again, but they've like run out of unique terms for starting a series fresh. It's like they're now calling it a creative reset. It's like how far are we going here? I can't wait for the spot where it's just security camera footage of like them walking out of the pitch meeting.
Yeah.
And that's they immediately just print it to
it's
YouTube.
Happening.
Like, we got funding for a movie. We don't even have a title yet, but stay
no one's
tuned.
Been hired. Coming? Maybe.
Maybe.
Not exactly a guarantee at this stage.
It's just it just turns into a fucking 24/7 stream of, like, the agent's office.
Chronicling
all trailers now.
Oh, man. What a wonderfully meta movie that would be to, like, chronicle the entire like 8-year development hell of some random movie.
Like you're just your standard ass Hollywood blockbuster.
And then you could do it really fucking, you can get real crazy with it and do it in real time.
It's a docuseries. This docuseries is about this docuseries. Quickly. Cuckoo.
Yeah, it's cacao. A genre-bending horror movie.
I'm gonna guess the twist right now is that this is a resort town. I just randomly thought, I'm like, oh, this is a resort town for like changelings who crave human flesh, and that's why she doesn't belong.
And they need, yeah, I kind of
they need her genes.
I kind of had a similar but somewhat different take. I summarized this as a evil Truman Show run by aliens. Because that was my read on the situation.
Yeah. It's something, some kind of sub people.
Yeah.
some pod people type not of business quite human, going on here.
That much I can say.
There is, speaking of inhuman, Babes.
Yeah. Another neon film on the opposite end of the spectrum. It's very much a Lana Glaser project. All her comedies are kind of like the very in-your-face brash. But it's a woman, mm-hmm. so it makes it funnier kind of humor style. Yeah. Which, you know, I liked Broad City well enough. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, it's also like it's a unique subject matter.
Yeah.
Which
I think the poll.
A woman comedian is like uniquely. This is one of the things a woman comedian is uniquely able to do material about.
Yeah. I think the poll quote calling this the bridesmaids of child rearing is a pretty succinct summary. What there's a scene in this trailer that I need to talk about specifically. It comes like 50 seconds in. She's at the clinic or whatever, finding out she's pregnant, and there's twin doctors, and I can't tell if they're actual twins or if they just CGI'd in a second version of the same actor.
I really hope they're twins.
I can't,
because that would like, because otherwise that would have been like something that came out of the writer's room is like, yes, we'll have these doctors be CGI twins for this
scene.
It's
just that the lighting doesn't exactly match each other or the scene. And I think that's why it kind of gives me this uncanny valley look to it. They also
It does look like the one on the left is like composited in. So I don't know. This, however, does have Hasan Minhaj in it, and I'm always a fan.
Yeah, no, I think everyone in this movie is demonstrated that they have the ability to be funny. I think this is it's a very unique comedy. It's pretty novel. I mean, there've been you know, comedy and comedy adjacent movies about, you know, what it's like to be pregnant. But I think this is kind of at least a new exploration in that rather lightly trodden genre or subgenre.
Yeah.
So I hope it does all right for itself.
Well, it'll probably show up. I'm just gonna be totally nothing to do with my opinion on this. This is the kind of movie where it shows up in eighth. It debuts in eighth place, stays for like 2 weeks in the top 10. And then goes to a streaming service.
Yeah, probably opens in only like 1,400 theaters at most, makes a couple $1 million, and then, it's off to whatever streaming service.
Yeah. For speaking of straight to streaming movies, Bambi the Reckoning.
Oh, I didn't even fucking see that one.
Don't worry. It's two guys talking about, oh, I hunted a deer once. He was free. He was a demon deer. He bites your face off. Or
oh,
whatever.
So it's fucking blood and honey bullshit.
Yeah. And then it's a really bad CGI deer flipping a car, and then screaming at the camera. Bambi, this like it, as if it had anything to do with the source material other than it's about a deer. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe they make some references.
Bambi.
Honestly, what was scarier was Bambi 2 coming out 50 years after the original.
Well, it was during the Disney Renaissance. The original 1923 version of Bambi has been public domain since 2022. So,
okay.
I guess they just they had the same idea as Blood and Honey, but I guess more artistic integrity. So they actually took their time to make the movie. They didn't shit it out.
Or maybe
in 6 weeks.
They said the Bambi movie, it's not there yet. We have to wait for the market to be ready. It's ahead of its time.
Yeah, they saw Blood and Honey made money. It's like, oh, we got one of those. Get the reels. Bring it to the editing room.
This does smack of like, what else we got in the back? What kids' properties can
bring
we
bring that shit to the editing room? Let's go.
Movies. I didn't see the trailer for Abigail. It's like Demon Girl.
I think Jake and I did this one of the weeks you were out. It's like a little vampire child. And like these, I think they're trying to kidnap her to ransom her because she's perceived to be the daughter of some wealthy person, but they're actually been lured there to be fed on.
Be sacrifices. Yeah.
Okay. It's basically the same movie as like The Invitation, just with a little girl. And then that leads us to The Pool Man. Been waiting for this trailer.
Pool Man. Yeah, I've actually been waiting to see like what was this about? Because that teaser did not. I guess it did its job in that it did not provide details. But this does.
Yeah, I obviously the similarities between this and The Big Lebowski are there. Obviously, this is a spiritual successor, or at least heavily inspired by it, but. I feel like his character is different enough from the dude to stand on its own merits.
Yeah.
And the plot is much more of like a man who knew too little spy thriller-esque thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit more, I guess, heavy on the plot in that it, you know... He's not totally out of
it. Yeah, it's not like a slice of life thing like The Big Lebowski is. As weird a situation as it is, it's not like a completely implausible thing.
Yep. But I mean, Chris Pine doing work in here, he looks like he's gonna kill this role.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote and is directing the movie, so this is his project. He's gonna give it his A game, which is considerable.
I know people who love Big Lebowski, and I don't know if they'll be keyed in. I'll be like, if they, I know, crazy, right? But I will make sure that they are aware of this movie coming out.
Yes,
be like, hey, if you like
when
that,
this comes out on May 10th, that's my sister Lauren's birthday. I'm gonna grab my girlfriend who's also a Big Lebowski fan. And we're going to go see this.
Go see it. Maybe with a little chemical assistance.
Maybe. I don't know if that will be necessary. But depends if we're reviewing it for the show that week.
Yes, that's true. Which this would also be a good candidate. Fine of mine, minimally. This one's for Jake. This one's for you, Boo. Tales of the Empire. It's more. I think this is more Rebels, post Rebels stuff. Jedi is raised by the Sith, it's the Empire.
Jedi is raised by
evil.
The Sith. Isn't that just a dark Jedi?
No, but she's really good inside. She's just, you know, she's been growing up in the wrong environment, I guess. I don't know. I'm extrapolating because I don't know. I have not watched Rebels or Resistance or Forces or series or Clone Wars.
Yeah, I don't.
This is an entire, like, franchise within the franchise.
It's the Dave Filoni-verse. Like, there's Star Wars, and then there's this shit Dave Filoni writes, and you know that because he can't help but insert his original characters into every fucking thing he writes. That's why Ahsoka got shoved down our throats in Mandalorian.
So, because Jake isn't here to actually give us context, I'm just going to go, where's Luke Skywalker? Where's Han Solo?
Why does this exist?
I thought Boba Fett killed the gray-headed dude. Or was that Obi-Wan? That was the Obi-Wan series. Yeah. Because they had Reva. They had Reva. Reva McIntyre of the dark side. And Obi-Wan really went hello there.
Certainly did. All right, that's trailers. We're going to move on now to the follow-up and follow-up on some of these movies. Godzilla Cross Kong, The New Empire, debuted in first with $80 million in 3,800 theaters.
Glad it's not Godzilla / Kong.
Yeah, I keep calling this Godzilla versus Kong every time I talk about it because...
Right.
I don't understand why my brain can't.
I want to call it Godzilla v. Kong, Dawn of Monsters.
Yeah. Or some shit like that.
And instead of Doomsday, they just fight a regular dude.
We're actually reviewing that at the end of the show. So we'll have our more detailed thoughts there.
Yeah.
But
stay tuned.
It's brought in $218.5 million so far. Much better financial performance than Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which tumbles all the way down to a $15.5 million gross, down 65.4% week on week, despite being in all of the theaters. That's quite a drop from its already not that impressive first week. It's managed to scratch its way across the $100 million barrier, yep. though. Dune Part 2 in third this week, $11.3 million. Pretty solid week-on-week retention, only dropping about 35 to 33% a week.
I think this is going to carry Warner's all the way through to summer. Well, or at least to, like, May.
Yeah.
May, late, mid, you know.
Yeah, maybe the end of this month. Godzilla vs. Kong is their next movie.
Yeah. They're running a good relay here.
Yes.
There's a lot of time for
handoff. I did it again. I call it Godzilla vs. Kong again.
they do fight for a second in this.
There is a versus element to it. And by rights, there should have been more of a versus element to it. But I guess they just kind of understood contextually for the situation that they needed to work together.
they understood the assignment. In fourth, Kung Fu Panda 4, it's found its place.
I know you're shocked that Godzilla Cross Kong might not have the most thought-out justifications for what happens on the screen.
Really? Who would have
realized? But yeah, CFP4, or KFP.
KFP.
I'm doing great tonight, guys.
That's why we're going fast. Yeah. Because the half-life on my brain cells, it's not
long. We're not long for this world, mentally.
I'm sundown.
10 point, sun's getting real low, big guy. 10.3 mil for KFP4, $368 million in worldwide, rather. In fifth place, we have Immaculate in its second week, the truly independent film, I guess. There's no distributor listed. $3.2 million, down 40%, but opening in eight more theaters. I don't know what eight theaters were on the fence about whether or not they wanted to run Immaculate, but I think they decided.
We're one short. We have to kill this movie before it finishes previewing in theaters. You got to watch out in the southern states. The film board will come after you for that. Yeah.
Immaculate does find itself in our spotlight this week. Shock of shocks. 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb is what we're looking there. 70% on Rotten Tomatoes with a 60% audience score, a 57 on Metacritic with a 6.2 audience score. So it seems like audiences generally were a little more favorable to the movie, mm-hmm. except weirdly in the Rotten Tomatoes case.
That's just Rotten Tomatoes Rotten Tomatoes.
Bizarre.
And them probably not being populated by, Spawn of Satan people who would relate to this movie.
Yes, honestly, this is the most qualified the real reviewers have been to do anything.
It's like, I see myself in this movie.
All right. We've got real reviewers such as Bloomer with his review, or their review of Immaculate. I really can't gauge gender off the name Bloomer, especially since that's like a woman's undergarment, right?
I guess so, yeah.
That's true. Anyway, 9 out of 10. Surprisingly brutal religious horror film that isn't fooling around. I went along to Immaculate, hoping or expecting perhaps Blumhouse levels of variable quality. What I got was one of those wonderful surprise horror film experiences where you can barely believe the extremity of what you're experiencing. I think that's supposed to be extremity.
I guess that falls under technically works. Yeah.
That such an experience can still be had in your local suburban cinema in 2024 is, paradoxically, a great comfort. Immaculate is a surprisingly brutal horror film with a vein of black humor about an immaculate conception in a retirement-focused nunnery. Parenthetical exclamation mark for some reason, but then just a period. That seems unnecessary.
Secret exclamation.
The direction is measured, suspense building, sometimes poetic, parenthetical. The enormous tear expelled from the heroine's eye as she watches torture through a keyhole, and parenthetical, end of sentence. The production design and texture and uncomfortable music are wonderful. There's a folk horror kind of paranoia at work, and also little ghosts of Suspiria about the place, especially in the section where Sweeney's cynical friend gets on the wrong side of the people running the nunnery. Isn't it a cloister?
So Suspiria was about a witch coven that runs a German dance studio. Yes.
Very similar, as you can see. Also, isn't it like a cloister, not a nunnery?
Yes. I myself don't know the difference. Sorry, Jake. You Catholic.
Before the finale, the brutality comes in small dose. Singular small dose.
One dose.
Meaning the film retains the power to shock. Sweeney must travel in her performance from a not atypical wide-eyed novatate? I mean, I know it's supposed to be... Maybe, someone who has a lot of naivete is what they're trying to communicate, but I don't think that's a word. To a woman completely brutalized and out of her mind, she succeeds. And I can anticipate the long-lasting shot of Immaculate finding its way into classic horror scenes canon. The film almost feels a little too short, but I think, why muck around? I hope Immaculate does really well today. Just today. As it's certainly not mucking around. Either way, I can tell that in horror circles, this film will stand in the long term. 23 out of 34 found that helpful.
Okay. Do you want to...
Sure, I'll go right into it. My brain's already fried. From... Oh my God. I think this is their phone number. Nasralph 736-748-161.
We're not doxing you because that's your username.
It's not enough numbers, but that was a funny joke. 1 out of 10. I waste of time, money, and intellect. I can't believe how these movies continue to be financed when they don't have a plot. It seems it was created to show Sydney Sweeney, parenthetical, that, by the way, her acting is terrible and is totally diminished by Vendetta Pokorali. And that's the end of the sentence. So I guess the sentence reads without the parenthetical. It seems to be created to show Sydney Sweeney. All right. Perhaps that's what a vehicle is.
I feel like I have to read this.
This movie is a bad mix of several good topics, but never consolidate into something serious. It could have been a good topic for a movie if it would have been better exploited, but unfortunately it was lost in nonsense. And please, the ending. There's just commas everywhere, man. Forget about superheroes with superpowers. This break any human conception of willpower. Two words. Absurd. Also, there are a lot of graphic violence. Not justified. Maybe just to add some interest into horror lovers. Parenthetical, this does not have any real horror elements. 12 out of 38 found that helpful.
It's the meme parenthetical editions that really do. This break any human conception of willpower. Absurd.
If you have a problem with that review, you can reach out to NazRalph at 736-748-161 and voice your complaints there.
Complaints. We move now. We move on to this perfect 5 out of 10 by Weisnitei. And we're going to switch from that to this, because this is Medicare movie. So I got to watch this movie today, and I have to say I will give it 5, and I think I saw every possible horror movie there is until now. Some nice scenes. Sydney is great and have a lot of potential. She really shine here. The movie is not scary, but have some nice and unpleasant scenes. I think the movie has a bad way of telling the story. I got out of the movie and didn't understand many things that was key to the storyline. Some things reminded me of the Rosemary Baby movie. So if you want a movie that have a lot of things unsolved and understandable, go watch it. It's also only 1 hour and 15 minutes, so yeah, it's short. 4 out of 7.
Okay.
I don't think the word understandable means what you think it means.
Well, it certainly wasn't understandable when he used it.
There's some things reminded me of the Rosemary Baby movie.
Baby.
All right.
Center of Cinema, who I believe has appeared on the show before, has this 10 out of 10 review. Best horror film of 2024 so far. But I think this might be the best horror film review of the Saturn Studs podcast so far. Spoiler alert, it's surprisingly politically charged. So I feel I have to do a political impression during this. And the only politician I can really impersonate with any consistency is Bernie Sanders. So you're getting that voice.
As relevant as our 2024 election, this film is scary as hell. A whole other level of disturbing and totally relevant as a cautionary tale. And symbolism to the machinations of the religious right, / turn fanatical, / turn Republican extremist, / turn MAGA. You see this movie and you get a feel that they have symbolically neatly packaged all the crazy stuff happening in a neatly packaged, most disturbing motion picture. And for those waiting for the second coming of Christ or the world to end, this movie should give you a glimpse at all the begging and pleading for that to happen, for many religious fanatics have been dreaming of that moment. Now you can see it on celluloid, so you can watch as many times as needed, so you can rehearse for the big day. Cheers from the dark side. Best horror film of 2024 so far. Great job, Sweeney.
That is pretty accurate.
17 out of 33 found this helpful.
The fact that the review used the term celluloid fucking sold that immediately. Bernie's absolutely the guy who referred to film as celluloid.
This is absolutely the right choice.
Oh. All right. The low reviews are actually kind of thin on the ground, so I moved up to, I do take the step that Jake never takes and go beyond into the threes. To give you this one, this 3 out of 10 by Status Quo, that's Quo with a K. Three out of ten. Jurassic Jesus. I do not get the appeal of Sydney Sweeney. Perhaps in this case, playing a nun and taking the focus off her chest and onto her face spotlighted the flaw which Sid exists in, which is an oblong blank face. Can we stop pretending she is anything but chest? Or are we still in this odd phase where she is the new look Hollywood will go with? Okay, so she's a nun here, and the powers that be leave no time in pointing out her attractive face. The Italian customs agents, to be precise. Why? Who knows? Perhaps it's to give her the sense of leering foreboding. Works better if her character understood Italian. She's an American who is elected to be a nun at this creepy Italian place. Sound familiar? Suspiria. Duh. Shortly after encountering weird bumps in the night, she's informed she's pregnant. Oh, and by Immaculate Conception. Get it? The title. Just break the fourth wall and stare at the camera, Sid.
All right, change my mind. This is the best horror movie review in the history of the show.
Anyway, the secret is that the church has one of the nails that Christ was nailed to the cross with. Eye roll. And this creepy covenant has been experimenting with impregnating nuns with the blood DNA lingering on that nail.
Oh my God.
Yep. Seriously. I would say this is truly B-level silliness, but it's shot so somberly, it's hard to fall under the category of so bad it's good. Ari Aster has nothing to worry about. The ending leaves a lot to be desired. Half the audience will want to see if the baby looks normal and Jesus-like. The other half will have already left the theater. Either way, she smashes it with a rock. None of this makes sense to her character or the links to the clues as to whether this creation is definitively evil. She just ups and kills it. Seriously. 27 out of 58.
All right, this may be the greatest movie of all time.
Just fuck. Eye roll.
I feel like...
All right, that's cool. I didn't even know... Like, I saw half the audience will see that it's normal and Jesus-like, and I'm like, you know what? If nothing else works, that line's going to work, but...
You got so much more. Man, that sounds almost exactly like the review for this movie I would write if I posted shit on IMDb. Yeah. That has a lot of Kurt Bennett trademarks in it.
This status quo gets us. He gets me. And, you know, in the same vein, we're going to end this on a classic, on a nice note. We got Do Not Come to the Cinema Depressed. He's back.
I think this is like his third straight week appearing in the segment.
I know. He's hanging out. We're catching him more on the regular. His active prowling hours are up. 6 out of 10, flanked by church emojis. That very ending was brutal and intense as hell. Just got out of an early screening of Immaculate. Even though I liked the 89-minute runtime of this particular film, the film needed to have more to it, which the ideas are there, but I just felt that some of the aspects of the film needed to be established and set up more. Things I did like. Traffic light emoji. The pacing of the film was very good. It had bits of interest throughout to keep me in for the entire runtime, though I thought those bits would be led to a movie to a more well-rounded picture, but alas... A baby in a crib emoji. Sydney Sweeney's performance was solid, and then that very ending was intense. Music emoji. The score was good and fitted the film perfectly.
I'm glad.
Scroll emoji. I actually liked the idea of the plot line. Dot, 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 dot. 7 dots. But on to my problems with the film. So the Covenant knew and got super excited that Cecilia conceived, but what about the tons of failures? Why wasn't there any doubt within the Covenant? Why would this be any different? facepalm emoji. The veneration of Cecilia. I thought that wasn't delivered particularly well either. Again, more things needed to be set up and established. I just felt that the overall delivery of the plotline could have been delivered better. Overall, that skeleton of ideas and that very ending. Why does he keep saying that very ending? It's.
If I could understand this man, I'd write a book and make $1 million.
It's true. It's a case study. That very ending made the film decent at the very best, and with those problems with the film, you could say it's not good enough, / leaning into quite bad if you're harsh on the film. 13 out of 24. Another one in the pocket, put it in the folder, and ship it off to Manila.
Where I'm sure he's from.
Definitely. That's immaculate.
Yep.
By its very, there are no flaws with the movie. It's in the name.
Yeah, it's immaculate, simply. Arthur the King, sixth place this week, down 41.7%. And out of 470 theaters, 2.48 mil. Late Night with the Devil actually drops only one spot, despite opening up in 408 more theaters. $2.16 million, only a 23.7% week-on-week drop. See, that's the thing with the rolling release that I never really understood, is like they typically still tend to lose money week-on-week. I'm not, I don't know, maybe, it probably the math works out. I mean, obviously, there must be some reason they do it.
But it's like fighting the tide as it comes in. Like, I feel like you're just struggling to stay in place. Because this has only made 8 million
in two weeks. I'm pretty sure that's more than enough to cover what it costs to make it.
I hope so. Like, even for thin, you know, for budget movies, that is a little thin.
I mean, how much money could it possibly take in the film? It's one set. It's, you know, like 4 or 5 actors, a bunch of extras.
It all just depends on how much they David Dalmashin asked for.
Probably not too much. I don't know how much he can really command.
yeah, honestly, I feel like this is gonna be a Shudder darling.
It already is.
And it's just enough to keep it above our number 8, debuting in 8th, Tilu Square, which I think...
It's more like Tilu Squared, because it's the...
Yeah, because I think this is an Indian movie.
Oh, yes, absolutely is. And it's the title is stylized with Tilu in parentheses with the two in superscript, which is not necessary. You don't have to put that in parentheses because that mathematical operation is just, yep, that's this.
There it is. It's right there. Unless you want to make sure the U isn't squared. It's the entire quantity, Tilu.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. That is the correct way to do it.
Then
it would be two L. You can't have the two L's together because that... If you have two of the same variable, then it's 2L, not LL. All right, clean up your math writing, Tilu, and then get back to me. It's made 2 point, despite the many flaws with its stylized typography, it has made $2.147 million worldwide off of a 1,870,000 opening. Which is all the money it's made domestically. So maybe this was just a one-night showing?
Maybe?
I don't know. Because Crew has a similar phenomenon going on. Crew, which just appears to be softcore porn of some sort.
I feel like maybe we saw a trailer for this, but I don't remember this. It looks like it has something to do with a plane.
Yeah, I think they try to steal a plane. Or something. The description does not lend any clarity.
Okay, it is also a Hindi movie.
Sure. So it's a, like, I'm not saying it couldn't be, but.
Well, the fact that they both debuted this week and, like you said, have similar stories.
Could have been a like a double feature, maybe.
Maybe.
But then why would they have different? I don't know. This has made more money. Worldwide, probably because it has sexy ladies in it. It's paid $3.6 billion worldwide.
Risk it, fake it, steal it.
And then rounding out the top 10, continuing its precipitous drop down the leaderboard, we have Imaginary, which dropped 50% again week on week and is out of 557 theaters, only averaging $711 per theater. Yike. That also, I don't think is... Yeah. Maybe that's right. I'm not going to do that math. Yeah, for $37 million all told, I'm sure plenty more than it cost to make, but did not have a lot of staying power. All right, Peter, who'd we lose this week?
Yeah, we were counting down on Cabrini, the Angel Studios movie. We has gone down to 12th from 9th. Love Lies Bleeding, down to 14th from 8th.
It's been out for 4 weeks. And, what?
I know. It doesn't feel like it. Just like Bob Marley, One Love.
Well, that feels like it's
a movie that I forgot had ever been in the top 10 is now in 10th from now in 17th from 10th after 7 weeks.
Yeah, that feels like it's been in theaters forever.
Yeah. A lot of things debuting not in the top 10. The Land of Saints and Sinners, which is the new Liam Neeson movie, debuting in 11th. The Goat Life from AA Films. You still have 22 more A's to go.
I don't want to cut you off, Peter, but I have to say that one such film is perhaps the most important film ever made, from Indicant Pictures, debuting in 52nd place in just 2 theaters. So really good per theater take of 28.10. Yeah. It is The Wendigo.
Where to go?
The Wendigo. A Native American teen resurrects an ancient demon to protect his family from meth dealers, but finds the creature's bloodlust uncontrollable, forcing the family to break the curse before becoming its next victims.
That's certainly a take on it. Especially, like, whenever I see that show up, I'm reminded of the fact that, like, a lot of Native tribes don't like people using that particular mythological animal in media. That mythological concept. It's one of the few ones where I'm like, they're like, please don't.
I mean, there's...
It makes me think when you see that compared to like, oh yes, he summoned this one to fight off the meth dealers.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's stuff like that. And like, every group objects to something being used in any way. Mm-hmm. Like, you can find one for anything. It's just the sad reality of the world.
Yeah.
But Indicant Pictures, I don't know, that seems like that could be like a native...
It looks like maybe it's like a spiritual kind of thing. Because the other one they have out this year, in a whole 2 slots up in 50th, is Mind, Body, and Soul. An existential mockumentary of Satan trying to adapt again to modern society that he may not fit
into. So it looks like they mostly do horror films and other like thriller type things. And actually, they got a pretty good product mix here. A lot of horror, mostly horror, probably because it's cheap to make. But they have this, I think it's documentary or something called Are You Proud? It's a docu-celebration of the LGBT rights movement. They've got one on the coronavirus conspiracy, which is not actually about that. It's a scripted movie,
yeah.
when a retired zookeeper is kidnapped by a crazed economist during the COVID-19 lockdown, he uncovers a grand mystery that connects every worldwide disaster together. The zookeeper and the economist work to discover who is truly at fault. That is the greatest line from a summary I have read in some time.
Oh, that's actually pretty good. But now you got me looking at these, and I haven't looked at the bulk in a minute. So I was very surprised, very surprised by some of these, like Carol Doda topless at the Condor. What a name. But no, what really got me was in number 41, hundreds of beavers.
Yes, I think I remember. We remember. Wait, maybe not.
No, I don't think I've seen this. In this 19th century supernatural winter epic, a drunken Applejack salesman must go from zero to hero and become North America's greatest fur trapper by defeating hundreds of beavers.
I remember seeing this title somewhere. It's been in theaters for 10 weeks. That's incredible.
Is the trailer going to be actually good? Let me see. Okay, so this is trying to be like a bad... like Charlie Chaplin-esque thing.
Sure.
This looks really low budget, though.
Oh, you think? The movie that's only made $207,000. Like, yeah, it probably is a student film.
Yeah. Did I just see this man run up and do a spear on a man in a beaver costume? I did. That was a rhetorical question.
Wait, hundreds of beavers, 41, right? So this is, oh, it's in 23 theaters. So there goes my theory about it being like last semester's.
I may watch this out of sheer curiosity.
All right, and we'll get the report back from Peter, assuming he lives through the encounter. Yeah. And we'll move now to gaming news.
Follow up in the future. Yeah.
Pretty slow week for gaming news, all things considered. We did get someone from Saber coming out and saying that the boss, supposedly, Matthew Karch, who is,
mm-hmm.
He's the CEO of Saber Interactive. After the chaos at Embracer, it's obviously something we're working on, and the remake is alive and well. We'll see. My yes. stance is unwavering. I will believe this game when it is booted up on my machine and I am running around on Terrace.
That's, yeah. All this is just crappy fluff to string along the populace.
I mean, they announced it 3 years ago and we've heard nothing but like, oh, development's not progressing like they'd like. Oh, they're changing studios from Aspyr to Saber. Oh, Embracer bought Saber. Oh, Embracer sold Saber. Like, none of this is good.
None of this sounds like there are people working on
this
the game.
This doesn't sound
My
like
hope
a
is that
game
there's
is
one
coming.
Dedicated guy who's like, this is actually a passion of his. And he's been like following it the entire time. He'll be the only guy credited on the game by the time it comes out in 2056. I don't know. I feel like you could make a fan. I feel like people could make a fan game at this point. Honestly.
There was a fan project to remake Terrace in Unreal Engine 4. I think it got shut down around the same time that they were getting ready to announce this game, but.
Because, like, it's basically, it's an adventure game with D&D third edition combat, right?
It's a CRPG in the vein of, ironically, Baldur's Gate 2, since that was Bioware's game before this.
Like, there is everything that was, even if you build, which you should, right? You build upon the features of the first two. This is nothing that an ambitious indie developer could not create.
No, it's, I mean, by today's standards, I mean, well, even by the standards of the time, the gameplay wasn't like revolutionary, but that's not the point of the game. The point of the game is it's really great story and, you know, decisions that matter. And, you know, like, yeah, you can get into the nitty gritty of the mechanics and build super powerful characters if you're in the spreadsheets, which I am. And have fun that way. But, you know, we had fun when we did our playthrough of, like, seeing how few squad mates we could end the game with.
Yeah.
Turns out it's a lot less than you think.
Pretty slim down them numbers. I'm thinking of, like, of the Kickstarter campaign RPGs that we've seen over the last few years and the AAA RPGs, by comparison, that we've seen over the recent few years. I would say, in like a, at a Kickstarter campaign level, where you have some of like the original devs working on it, you know, one of those kind of projects.
Yeah,
I almost feel like they would be in better hands that way.
Yeah, I mean, you'd never be able to get the Star Wars license doing that, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like I call
from
me
a,
old school.
From a perspective of what's best for the
I don't
game.
Feel that Coder really needs to be remade. Like, would it be a nice to have? Sure. But it's not like the original game doesn't hold up. It totally does. Especially if you play it on PC. There are some graphics mods that you can use to zhuzh up the visuals even a little bit more. But if you render out at, like, 1080p and up, you know, the game scales surprisingly well.
And it had, all the polish that it brings to the table is not just in like graphics and performance and stuff that kind of ages more quickly in a video game medium than in others, but it's the writing, it's the voice acting, it's the settings. Yeah. You know, it's all those stuff which are much more perpetual.
And like, even if this game does come out, there's no way that it's not going to be negatively impacted by all this shuffling.
Oh, yeah, and it's going to have to, like, it's. I feel like it's going to have to incorporate a whole bunch of canon, because now it has to, you know, we're in the new set of canon, even though it's far removed from any of the events that Disney is, of the stuff that Disney has made, I feel like it still has to live in that shadow.
Yeah, who knows? Like, I don't follow anything that Dave Filoni has written, so maybe he's inserted some of his bullshit.
Dave Filoni coming on as lead writer for the story.
Well, it wouldn't shock me if he tried to like get one of his fucking original characters shoved in there.
Candorous Ordo comes back and he's like, "Here, this is my new son, John DeFett."
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Candorous just pulls out the Darksaber. Yeah, I've had this.
Kanye West in a Mandalorian helmet.
Yeah, or he fucking pulls out the Darksaber. He's like, yeah, I've had this forever because I was Mandalore.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So that's what's
because that's the symbol of who's Mandalore, not the helmet. Nope.
Yeah. So we will...
Not the
just
thing that makes sense
have,
to the culture.
I will, maybe I'll start, I'll take an oath to, you know, take a sip of something whenever I hear news about this game that's probably not going to come out for a long time, if at all.
Yeah, wouldn't hold your breath, basically.
It'll just be something, be like, oh, hey, it's one of those. So, in other news... Again, slow news day, so we're getting stuff from the BBC. We're not even on video
We've
game
gone
news
off
sites, but
grid.
Inexplicably, the BAFTA, like BAFTA, you know, the Film and Acting Association, Film and Theater Association, right? It's British Acting, Film and Theater Association, I think something like that. Inexplicably, they have put out a poll for the most iconic video game character. And the results are in. It's not who you expect. Kurt, I'll give you five guesses. Actually, no, I'll give you a six. I'll give you a whole revolver.
I was reading something else. What's the question?
According to a BAFTA poll, who is the most iconic video game character of all time?
BAFTA. Okay, so it's
I'll give you six guesses.
All right, Mario.
No.
Pac-Man.
No.
All right, now I got to start thinking British.
I don't think it's quintessentially British. Okay.
Link?
No. I'll just say it's not a Nintendo character.
Nathan Drake.
No.
Is it a human or an animal?
Yes. Okay.
That does not help. Solid Snake?
No. We got one more.
No, PlayStation was really popular in the UK. Is it a real person?
No. Okay.
Sonic.
No. It is, so, this poll isn't inexplicable, as I was reading more. It marks the 20th BAFTA Games Awards. You know, those famous games awards. Mm-hmm. But according to the poll, the most iconic video game character is Lara Croft.
You know what? It was a PlayStation character.
When you say Nathan Drake, I was like, do I say you're getting closer?
I was right around it when I got into Solid Snake and Nathan Drake and, you know, all the other PlayStation characters. If I had gotten the not a Nintendo character after Mario, I definitely would have got there.
Yeah. So that checks out.
Yeah.
The most iconic.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, even in America, I think she'd score rather highly for the polygon boobs. Like, everyone knows that either from living it or the memes.
Shelley Blonde, the actress who voiced the original Lara, was interviewed. She tells the BBC Newsbeat that she's not surprised, even though she admits she's never played the game herself. What is so iconic about Lara Croft is the fact that she is a female lead in a video game. She's all about girl power and female empowerment. She's at the forefront. She is what the adventure is.
She's not wrong. I mean, it's not unprecedented, but, like, other than Sam, and even I think you could make the argument that Lara Croft, for reasons both above board and not above board, is probably more iconic than Samus as a female lead in a video game. She's often discredited as a female lead because she has the big jubblies, even though from the perspective of what her character does, she should be lauded as a very resourceful and capable female lead.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of vibe they tried to hit with the PlayStation 4 kind of series there. Yeah. Hit a little more of that. And she is British. That is important. So for the purposes of this, for BAFTA. So Shelley Blonde will be at the Games Awards on the 11th of April to present one of the awards.
Man, a lot of shit's happening on April 11th.
As a special guest. Yeah. So maybe we'll have those next week, because I want to see what the BAFTA Games Awards. Yeah,
it'd be curious to see if it's much different than, like, the regular Games Awards and whatnot. Mm-hmm. All right, and lastly, we'll give you all our annual, weekly, not annual, Helldivers 2 war update. New major order is to wipe the automatons off the face of the planet.
Kill them bots.
Take the last three planets. We took Maya earlier, actually not earlier today, like just 2 hours ago. It fell.
Very nice.
Right now,
I won't miss the meteor
showers. We are kind of split between Tibbet and Durgan. We're not going to make progress on either world if we don't consolidate our forces. So there's currently a lot more people on Tibbet. So if you are Not that this information is going to be relevant by the time this show is published, but go to helldivers.io and go to the planet with the most people on it. If you are currently playing Helldivers and you do not know about that site, there you go. That's where you should go if you want to figure out how to most efficiently attack the Major Order. The way Liberation has been changed up is that it is calculated as a percentage based on the percentage of players on that front on a particular planet. So now we've got, you know, 64% of players are on the Western front, which is the bot front, but there's 71,000 on Durgan and 127,000 on Tibbet. So our liberation efforts getting split pretty heavily.
So I know we've been on Tibbet. Yes. That's a jungly, purpley kind of land, and Durgan's bot fire hellscape. So we'll see how it pans out. I have not played on Durgan too much.
Yeah. At the time of recording, there's 2 days, 8 hours, and 57 minutes left in the Major Order. Current projected time to take Tibbet is 2 days and 15 hours. So that's not going to be enough time, and we still have to take Durgan after that. So, fortunately, the weekend brings a lot of extra players, and hopefully we can get the word out to consolidate onto one planet. I don't care which, but we got to...
This could be the historic first complete liberation of a front for Helldivers,
yes.
too.
I'm sure the bots won't be gone forever, but...
The automaton mess is ever recurring, but we will get to see how the grander scale of the scenarios plays out, because this is where we're starting to learn if this is going to be the same as Helldivers 1 or different. From what I've heard from Helldivers 1, an entire scenario campaign takes about a couple weeks, and then they would set it up.
Arrowhead has stated that their desire with Helldivers 2 is to make it more of a continuous war, but that can that can include a lot of shit, like a temporary defeat and then they regroup and reform, or a new fro enters the fray. A lot of people are speculating that the Illuminate are going to come into picture after this. So, and there's a new war bond dropping on Thursday, so there's speculation that could be the sign of new things to come in terms of enemies, but we'll see.
But this last push is going to be the most interesting, because this is also the time that they dropped all the new bot content on us. Keep your eye out for April 11th. There will be the boom boom pow war bond coming out, including the Liberator. The Emancipator.
Yeah, it's a new assault rifle.
Flat gun, the explosive crossbow, the grenade pistol, and the thermite grenade.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the thermite grenade is going to work on like chargers and shit.
Yeah, because that's what they show. It shows it like melting through chargers armor.
Yeah. So that should be interesting.
Lots of more cool stuff, more content. Always great. The cause of democracy marches ever onward.
Yes.
And we will...
So we march deeper and deeper into Warner Brothers Monsterverse.
Yep.
With Godzilla, Cross, Kong, New Empire, something like that.
Yes. The new dudes.
So, this is definitely the worst of the recent output into the MonsterVerse. I still think King of the Monsters was probably the best, and it's gotten progressively worse from there. Godzilla versus Kong was still fairly good. It delivered on, and to be fair, this movie does too. Like on the monster fighting, this delivers quite well. And honestly, I think there's a movie in here that's just a silent film about Kong, you know, or mostly silent film, dialogueless film about Kong, you know, fulfilling his need for community and finding a new home for himself. Because that was really the most interesting story in this. The human side, I criticized the human side of the story in Godzilla versus Kong for being overly goofy and contrived and kind of pointless feeling. This one was even more so. Yeah. I don't even know why they bothered with the human side of the story.
The only thing that happened with the people that ever interacted with, so I guess it's minor spoilers, whatever, you saw it in the fucking trailer. They give Kong his power fist. That's Infinity all Gauntlet, that they do. Yeah. And maybe they go into it's weird because there is a whole plot. There's a whole human side B plot where they go into the Hollow Earth, they go on an adventure, and they discover the City of the Ancients.
Yeah.
In the Hollow Earth. What is it all for?
To resurrect Mothra.
The little girl makes Mothra appear out of nowhere.
She's just there.
Just apparates. I thought Mothra was in like a cocoon or something and like a regenerative.
Yeah, I remember that from the end of King of the Monsters.
Yeah, instead, Mothra is summoned straight out of the plot's ass. Which I don't care about. It really does not bother me.
Yeah, no, like,
because this movie is very strongly unserious.
It's not about that.
There's many comedic sequences of King Kong getting like jumped. Like he goes into a bad neighborhood. And like we were cracking up like half of this movie,
It was pretty funny. Like it was the way Kong beats up the other apes in the Hollow Earth. It's just really fucking funny. just
throwing dudes at other
dudes.
He picks
up this little fucking kid that tried to like bite him and cracks another dude over the head with him.
Swings like a fucking baseball bat. Yeah, no, dude, I kind of like the mini Kong ape guy because he's the most shifty, like sketchiest little traitor
asshole like Gollum,
all the time.
But then in the end he becomes maybe a little bit more than that. I guess so. The executive summary is there's two halves to this movie. The monster half is as entertaining as the monster halves in these movies have always been. And the human half is probably the weakest human half to date in the series. So if you want something akin to Godzilla Minus One, this is not the movie for you.
No.
If you want something akin...
This really shows the dichotomy of Godzilla films.
Well, so here's the thing. Like, Godzilla Minus One is very unique. Like, even amongst the Toho Godzillas, there's like three serious ones that have ever been made. And that's one of them.
Yeah. It's like...
Zero...
Like Shin Godzilla.
And Shin Godzilla. Yeah. So I think it's just those three, the three most recent ones. All the other ones are goofy as hell, too.
Yeah. This is very much like a Showa-era Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
Godzilla in this, though, he's... I like him. He's very down to business. I appreciate about him.
Yeah, I mean, Godzilla almost didn't have to be in this movie. This movie is really more of a Kong story. And I think it could have been just a Kong movie without too much detriment to it, to be honest. Honestly, I think it might have made the movie a little bit better. But it's the Godzilla franchise, so you can't really not have Godzilla in the movie.
Right. I think that's part of the contract, is they both have to be in the movie together.
Yeah.
Godzilla, for his part, has no character arc.
No,
his arc is he goes and gets a power up and experiences no trouble along the way. He defeats all his enemies with little issue, gets his power as was planned, and then uses it effectively in the final fight.
Yes. the Rey Skywalker storyline.
Yeah.
So Godzilla's major development is he kills. You see him murk two other kaiju, and then he puts on his breast cancer awareness month scales and gets ready to fight.
Well, he sideboards in anti-freeze tech.
Yeah, so I saw an article. I didn't read it, so they'll not say I read an article, but I saw an article that the headline stated the transformation was inspired by Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
I think they mean Dragon Ball Super with the Super Saiyan Rosé. But then again, I did not read the article to see if the author was a hack, fraud, con man or not. So,
yeah, it remains to be seen. You count yourself lucky.
Yeah.
Author.
But anyway, we'll talk spoilers now.
If you like the previous ones and if you like Roland Emmerich movies and you're in the mood for like a Roland Emmerich level of vibe without maybe so much wand destruction.
Yeah, maybe. I'll say this. If you enjoyed King of the Monsters enough to go see Godzilla versus Kong and you didn't hate Godzilla versus Kong, you'll probably be okay with this movie. If Godzilla versus Kong was pushing it for you, I would not venture into this movie.
Yeah. If you're at a theater that is near enough to a place where you can drink beer.
That was also a great asset.
That is important. This is a good movie to go in.
A little buzz. I mean, most movie theaters are in malls. A lot of malls have restaurants. A lot of restaurants serve alcohol. Put two and two together, but drink responsibly.
Yep. Think about it. I guess we'll talk spoilers.
Not that there's a whole lot of plot to spoil here.
No, it's
Kong's living Kong in the Hollow
meets
Earth.
Kong meets the cheap heat heel of the Scar King.
Yeah, the Scar King is. This is probably where this movie falls apart the most, is in the villain. The Scar King is just so like, haphazardly established. Like they do an expo dump about
him. I saw better characterization in like episodes of Genndy Tartakovsky. Here we go. Primal.
Yeah, I mean,
like this is the level of like a Primal episode.
Primal had much better characterization.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's only talked about. Like you get exposition dumped about why he's a big bad. But the thing is, when he and Kong fight, Kong's totally kicking his ass until he summons his Freezy Lizard.
Scar King only wins because he's an underhanded bitch.
Like Kong had his number for sure. Until this Freezy Lizard, who I think is probably the most wasted character.
Yeah, it's just it's a plot device that maybe has like it has an arc an inch
like
wide
you could,
where it's like, oh good, I'm free now. I don't want to be a bad
there's,
guy.
There's a story to be told there, right? Because if the Scar King is kind of like the Funhouse Mirror version of Kong, this is supposed to be like the Funhouse Mirror of Godzilla, and there is some like mirror images
as demonstrated by the very obvious big framing they're jumping at each other scene.
And there's some more like poetic like diametric opposed traits there. So like this is the Freezy guy, Godzilla has his atomic fire breath, the opposites. This one caused the Ice Age. Yeah, that's about all I got.
Godzilla caused the nuclear age.
Yeah, but like he's controlled through a scale of his, I guess.
Basically a shock collar. Scar King has his fighting dog on a shock collar. And he uses it. He runs his neighborhood with an iron fist. Yeah. King Kong comes in with the most attitude of any guy. Like there's so much attitude in Kong on this
Kong's just tired of all the bullshit. He just wants a home. He wants to settle down with his son and his dog.
I don't hear no yapping from no fools.
Gotta teach these punks a lesson.
Yeah, there's that like the, I that's why we were like laughing at a lot of this, because it was almost slapstick in a way, some of these fight scenes.
Yeah.
We already talked about the one where he goes into the, again, it's the Hollower Earth. They find that there's a subterranean level underneath the Hollow Earth where the Scar King resides in fucking Mordor.
Yeah, essentially.
And he's got his, like, it's a Conan the Barbarian, like, slave camp.
And I'm not exactly sure what they're doing. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
they're just like hauling rocks.
They're just
shit.
Hauling rocks with no general purpose. I thought maybe it was to like.
You would think it would be to build like a palace to the Scar King's greatness
or
something.
Some,
or build a way out.
Something like that. You know? But it seems to have no aim or purpose. And then Kong shows up and starts shit. And like we said,
he starts the slave rebellion.
Yeah, and the Freezy Lizard shows up and he escapes, but he gets frostbite on his hand. So they give him the Infinity Gauntlet. And
they give him the Power Punch and a few hundred gallons of methamphetamine.
Yeah. And he goes up to the surface to lure Godzilla to help him.
Yes. I'm putting a call out post on my twitter.com. Godzilla's a bitch ass motherfucker.
Godzilla
he pissed
takes
on my wife.
The bait. They have a little scuffle.
Yeah, and this is where if you've seen anything about this online, you've probably seen this gif of Kong going like, whoa, no, hey bro, hold on. Hear me out, bro.
Wait just a second.
And then Godzilla giving him a spear into the side of the pyramids. Yeah.
There are a lot of wrestling moves randomly. I think Kong at one point gave one of them a brain buster.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
I do. I always pop when a wrestling move gets thrown into a fight scene, which is one of the reasons why I like No Way Home a lot, because fucking Green Goblin just powerbombs Spider-Man through an apartment building, and it's the greatest thing I've ever fucking seen.
Oh, I would pog in the theater if I saw Kong give the Monster of the Week the People's Elbow.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I popped in the theater by myself, pretty much, when I watched Hobbs and Shaw and Roman Reigns the doo-wah. I was like, hey, I've seen that on TV.
I know who that
I
is.
Seen it.
So they go down Hollow Earth. They find ancient race number 573, older than the Lemurians, older than the Atlanteans.
The Lemurians.
This is where we get the exposition dump off of pictorial carvings.
Yeah, it's hieroglyphics. And
she's like, the lady, the scientist lady, who I think is from the Monarch series. Again, I wish Jake was here because he saw that series and could tell us if anything mattered to this.
I mean, it must have, because they referenced Mechagodzilla like five times, and he was not in any of the other movies.
Yeah. So, for those who watch that series, I guess that's a good payoff. It did not impact my viewing of this film. She's like, because she's like reading. It's like, I can kind of make out what this story is, and then proceeds to give a 10-minute exposition dump in extreme detail.
It was one of the more egregious exposition dumps I've seen in quite some time. Honestly, I think the last one that was as egregious came in another movie that I happen to love, and that's Willy's Wonderland. I think this might be worse simply because it doesn't have a line as great as those familiar with satanic blood rituals claim.
Yeah, doesn't, not quite as good.
Nothing that hits that hard.
Yeah. We forgot about the mother-daughter relationship arc. So we can have a human
element.
Yeah,
she has the last of the Iwi, or so we think, as her adopted daughter. And she's struggling to fit in because she's getting psychic visions of the Skull King for some reason. Yeah. It's a call for help. They want her to go somewhere.
They have the crystal Wi-Fi tower. They have crystal 5G from the Hollow Earth.
Yeah, they're reaching out psychically to summon her because they believe that she can summon Mothra. That's the involvement. There's actually a justification.
Which
Mothra doesn't need to be in this movie.
No. They have a couple clutch tags, a couple hot tags.
Yeah, but like
you could
cut those out of the movie and it still works. It also gives you the opportunity to cut a lot of the human side of the story. This movie's 2 hours long. You could easily cut 20 minutes of the human B plot, and the movie is a very tight 90 minutes that goes hard.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, no, the daughter becomes Lisan Algae, and Lisan Algae. They put the mustard on the forehead,
yeah.
And she summons Mothra, and then they fight. And Mothra, like, he, I don't know. Yeah, like I said, like, what is Mothra doing this? I don't know. She makes a web net or some shit. Yeah, and then they fight Scar King. There's like zero G fighting because there's zero G crystal dimensional gravitational disruptions. And then they go topside. And they fight, and there's more fighting. Then they grab the key fob to the shock collar, and break it. And then Frost.
Well, you see, he had the Mind Stone, and so Kong needed it for his gauntlet.
For his gauntlet, yeah. I'm surprised that there was not a scene where Godzilla charged up Kong's power fist with his atomic fire, and Kong did a fire Shoryuken on the Scar.
That might have been a bit too on the nose.
That's for the next movie.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to me. I'm reading Godzilla versus Kong's plot summary because it's been a minute, and I just wanted to make sure I wasn't talking out of my ass when I said that fucking Mechagodzilla wasn't in the movie. Mechagodzilla is in the movie, but is not an antagonist,
What? I thought it was... I know there was a robot as the final villain that they both team up against. And it was powered... Oh, yeah, I think it was in the original one. It was Mechagodzilla, and it was powered by King Ghidorah's, like, skull brain.
Right,
I remember
yes.
this.
Okay.
Because its brain was in its skull and not in its
yes,
brain.
Yes, I remember that now. So you already had the team up.
Yeah, that was
against,
how the first one ended. And
against the far more iconic villain? So this was always going to be a hard sell. But I feel like you got such a deep library of these things, and you can create mm-hmm. something a little more interesting than the Skull King.
Right. And you've made your MonsterVerse, and this is, of the connected universe or the franchises that you're trying to build, this is one where I say you probably want to start building this up to something, at least for like 3 or 4 movies. Just have something that you're working towards.
Yeah,
the Titan like army that they you know is starting to be built in the background by I don't know Destroyer.
So here's I
don't know who are smart monsters in Godzilla's menagerie.
I'm not sure, but the thing is, they already had the movie they were building to. That's Godzilla versus Kong. Like they did Kong Skull Island, and then they after Godzilla, and then they did King of the Monsters, and they set up the fact that Kong was out there and it's in a shared universe, and then they had the throwdown in Godzilla versus Kong. That was the buildup. This is their post-endgame effort.
Oh, this is the phase
yes,
four?
Yes, we've entered phase four, and we've wrapped up Kong's story, and we've introduced a younger, more cost-controllable version of Kong that can appear in future movies.
We've made marketable Kong. Grogu
yeah,
Kong.
I feel like...
Everyone needs a Grogu
this
now.
This is... If I were in charge of this project, I think this is the last movie I have Kong in, at least for a while. Because you can do Godzilla versus whatever monster. You can have Mecha Ghidorah. That's an easy one you could do. You could have... You know, any other, you could do an OC even. There's stuff you could do, a couple Godzilla versus movies. And then maybe have like a really big bad or collection of big bads. Like, say,
what was it, like Gigan?
Yeah, that and King Ghidorah and like Godzilla's like greatest enemies have somehow been resurrected. Well, give a reason. Don't say somehow they were resurrected, because that didn't work out well last time someone tried that.
Somehow Palpatine
returned. The resurrected in Godzilla, he's out. he fights nobly, he gets through a lot of them, but he gets to like the higher tier ones and he's just really outgunned, and then Kong makes the save, and they kind of like exchange a glance where, you know, the thought being exchanged is, you scratch my back, now I'll scratch yours. And they go on and they team up and they win the day. But I don't know what designs you have on how long you're going to keep this series going. Like, I feel like if you're going to end it, this isn't a bad one to end it on. Like I said, this is actually a really good ending for Kong as a character. Cause he's amongst his people. He has his son and his dog, and he's ready to rule Hollow Earth. And I think that's a great spot for him to stay. And we don't need to do anything with Kong again.
Yeah. He can, I don't know, maybe he gives the exposition in the next one. They come and see him about the new monster.
Honestly, I'd be more entertained by how they'd do that.
Yeah. Yeah, just it's a movie for being a movie. That's why I'm like, if you're, you know, don't, this is, you know, as sometimes we say there's movies where you gotta turn your brain off. This is one of those.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't think too hard about it, it's fine. And I mean,
and don't pay attention to the human stuff, like, at all.
Yeah, you don't need to pay attention to the human stuff. It's just a lot of weird humor and curious song selections.
Yeah. Yeah, they got the Warner Brothers library out in force for this one.
And they pick some interesting choices for certain scenes. It's goofy, it's silly, but the monster fights are still entertaining, and that's really why you're going to see this movie. Do you have to see it in the theater? Probably not. I don't know that it's worth the price of a movie ticket in today's age. If you can find a cheap matinee, I'd say it's worth $10 to go see. But I wouldn't pay more than that.
If you're fine with watching Godzilla on streaming, and you were, because that's where it came out, thank you very much. Godzilla, I think it was King of the Monsters, right? No, or was it
Godzilla versus Kong? Was available day and date on HBO Max, but it did also get a theatrical release.
Yeah. I remember it was like, it was the movie that saved the theaters, or it was like one of the first ones out after the kind of pause there. But if you watch that streaming, then yeah, watch this streaming. It'll be out on HBO probably, or Max, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's better served as a movie you watch on streaming. That way you can fast forward through the human bits that don't matter and just watch the best parts of the movie.
Let me see if there's... We didn't stay for the credits because we were like, I did not care. There is no post-credit scene, so they're not teasing anything. All right,
so this might well be the end. And if it is, I mean, you didn't go out on top. But you put out a competent effort. You know what it kind of reminds me of, in like at least the vibe I get from it at the end of it, is the third J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie, where like it wasn't a real conclusive thing, but you're like, yeah, I think I'm good.
Yeah, where that's when those kind of either or movie endings kind of make sense, where they're like, okay, we can end this here, or we can go. I'm leaving it open if we need to, but we don't really, you know, there's not a strong incentive to keep going. So we can also consider it wrapped up here. And that is, the kind of the end of this movie. Everything's in a good spot. So depending on how this does, and depending on if they want to make a second season of Monarch.
Yeah.
Well, there's always room. There's always room to make more money. There's always money in the Godzilla
stand. I mean, I guess it's going to depend a lot on how this movie does financially. It's made about $200 million. Let's see if we can find any info on the budget. Like, obviously, if this makes a good amount of money and shows that there's an appetite for these sorts of things, I'm sure we'll get another one. It was $135 million. So if we use our standard, needs to make about this much to break even, we're looking at $337 million, which it'll probably hit. It's already at $218. I can see it. I don't know. Maybe, yeah. I don't think another $100 million's out of the question. I don't think it's a guarantee either, especially as this one isn't, to the shock of no one, it's not reviewing well with critics.
Yeah, it's not a very depthful movie, especially compared to, you know, the last Godzilla movie, which was Godzilla Minus One. I'm sure that's still ringing in the minds of the review.
Okay,
the critics.
Yeah, all right, so, yeah, with critics at least. But I mean, the cold reality is that this movie made more in its opening weekend domestically than Godzilla Minus One made its entire theatrical run. Its
entire run, yeah. Yep.
There's room for both to exist. And if you're someone who turns your nose at the MonsterVerse, just know that the guy who made Godzilla Minus One loves these fucking movies. So,
yeah.
There's that. But I think that's going to be it for us on this one. We'll be back next week with something. I know there's a lot coming out on the 11th. Fallout, the series debuts on the 11th, the new Warbond on the 11th, the BAFTA Game Awards on the 11th. Very popular day, but we'll be covering something. I don't know that we have anything like super duper lined up at the moment, but when we do, you'll be the first to know.
We will be there with something.
Until then, be well, stay safe, and party like it's 1995.
Peace. Bye-bye.